You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
Yeah. You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation, sometimes in multiplicity. Tonight's episode is The Perfect Mate. I'm Chris from South Carolina.
And I'm James from London.
And if at first you don't succeed, try again. I'm Lou from Nebraska. Chris!
I think I can. What's up, man?
What's happening?
Oh, man. I am glad to be back on the Battle Bridge. It has been far too long.
Absolutely. And after what you've gone through to try and get on this show?
Especially tonight. Especially just today. Yeah.
Yes. Somewhere there is a YouTube broadcast that should I delete or let people find? Make some good bloopers.
I think certainly deep in that. Don't delete it.
Yeah. Chris, you muted yourself.
Yeah, I tend to do that. The guys on UP2 don't like to hear me.
Oh well,
in the background making weird noises.
Well, they're not here today, so
so I can just stay unmuted the whole time.
You can stay unmuted.
There are
the whole
no
time.
Rules.
Yes. All right, Chris. Well, it's good to have you on again, and it's getting late, so why don't we roll on?
It's great to be here. So tonight's show, as we said, was The Perfect Mate, and the synopsis for tonight's show is Picard serves as host for a peace treaty between two warring planets, but he may be unable to resist the reconciliation gift, a beautiful empathic metamorph who is to be presented by one leader as the other's wife. This is the 21st episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is April 27th, 1992, written by Rene Echevarria and Gary Picante, with teleplay by Gary Picante and Michael Piller. This is directed by Cliff the Bolian Bowl, and guest stars include Famke Janssen as Kamala, Tim O'Connor as Briam, Max Grodinchik as Par Lenore, and Mickey Cottrell as Ulrich, Michael Cinder as Cole, and a few minors not worth naming, or as I would say, uncredited actors acting as lascivious minors. Oh, and Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer.
Yes.
So, what do we think of this episode?
What do you think?
I have conflictions about this episode because I watched it four times and I was not bored a single one of those times. So there's a large part of me that something in this episode taps into something in my brain. But I don't like what they did. I don't like the way it was written. Yeah, it's a lot. They put a lot on the table, and then they just kind of leave you. And so, but I can't get it out of my head. So I feel like it's complex, and we shouldn't just write it off. It's one of those episodes that requires a lot of thought.
Thought-provoking, or No, I don't. Basically, okay, so to me, this has to do with prostitution. Plain and simple. The pimp is bringing the hooker to the John. That's what I'm getting for it. But along the way, the pimp has a conversation with this girl in the car while they're driving to where the gig is. And he's really starting to get into who she is and feels bad that he's actually delivering her to some guy who's going to use her for basically, you know, as a, for money, I guess you could say. Am I far off on that?
You're very far off. You just called Captain Picard
a pimp,
a common pimp. I completely and fully disagree with that altogether. I don't know where you got that take. I'm going to do the Billy Madison line now. Everything that you've said is just wrong.
He's almost an unwitting. Yeah, he's an unwitting pimp. He really obviously had no idea that this woman in the eggshell was what they were doing, that she was going for this. They call it arranged marriage. But basically, that's all he was doing was delivering this woman to another man.
So I understand where you get the prostitution idea, because that's how Beverly presents it. I don't know that I agree with Beverly's assessment of it as that. However, I guess that is a take that you could have on what this is. But I'm interested to hear what the doc thinks.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, well, similar to Chris, I think that this is kind of a quite thought-provoking episode, and mainly the thought that it provoked was, is this the worst episode of Star Trek, or is it just the worst episode of Star Trek Next Generation?
Well, certainly of Season 5.
So, okay, why is it the worst episode of all time? Like, worse than Code of Honor.
Okay, well, hang on. I've been on record of saying that Code of Honor did something great, which was, it was the first Star Trek episode I ever saw. And it might be horrendous, but I watched that as maybe an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old, something like that. And they had the spaceship, and they had the transporters, and they had the little thing at the end where they beamed Tasha away, and then they managed to save her. And I was sitting there as a child thinking, this is fantastic. And I was able to get that from Code of Honor. Now, I admit that that's a very kind of like personal connection. And maybe there's someone somewhere out there is also sitting there thinking, I remember the first episode of Star Trek I watched with his big golden testicle and the Ferengi popping by, and it was great. So maybe. But for me, I've always considered this episode to be pretty boring. I was watching it probably critically for the first time in preparation for this. And I think it's a mess, and I think that some of the questions they want to ask, they don't really end up asking and posing it very well. And instead, they present you with this kind of convoluted storyline, which basically comes down to, hey, wouldn't it be great if Picard had a love interest? And that's really it.
If that's all they were trying to do, then yes, this sucks on every level. But I feel like there was so much more than that, though.
Yeah, but this. I think initially maybe they tried to set this up, but then they have these convoluted plot twists and setups that really sidestep any of the natural questions that I think most people would expect the story to go in down. And I don't know. I am very interested in seeing how anyone can defend this, Chris.
Yeah, me too. Oh,
you're not going to hear me defend this episode, because ultimately, like, the final point of it and where it goes is absolutely and utterly atrocious, and I would never, ever stand behind any of the messages that this sends. But, again, it's still sitting in my brain. Like, I can't get it out of my head. I've watched it 3 times. Mostly, I will tell you what it needed more of, and this is the only defense I can give it. Everything that Beverly Crusher does in this episode is absolutely and utterly fantastic, and it needed more of that.
Of course it did. Absolutely. Without question, I've got on my list here, Crusher is correct. And I'm not necessarily saying that she's correct in the way that she's portraying the situation, but she's asking questions. And
she's asking the right questions.
In a way, yes, she's the right questions. And I felt that a good Trek episode takes those, looks at them through various asides, and then kind of reaches some kind of conclusion. Whereas here, I feel that she asks the question so that Picard can go, yeah, I understand, but we're going to ignore that going forward. And they use it as a way of almost shooting down the fact there'll be criticism that, you know, dude, did you not think that this might be a little bit like, you know, people smuggling? Oh, yeah, yeah, but, you know, Crusher raised it in a 3-second, you know, conversation with Picard, and then Picard went into the bedroom with her to try to get his end away, and now that's what we're bringing to the table about that discussion. And I thought that the Crusher scenes would have been good had they ever been acted upon or you know, were being used as anything other than, you know, in my opinion, just shielding from the issue.
The whole third act was him acting upon Crusher's position and their final conversation about it, which I feel like is kind of the moral crux of the episode. And we're kind of getting into this without Lou taking us through the episode as a whole. I don't
Continue.
Know how y'all feel about it.
Oh, we don't do that. Bounce.
Oh, you don't? All right, fair. So that whole final conversation that they have is where I think the crux of whatever morality you can take from this, which is not much, is found. And it's sort of nihilistic, but I do like the conversation that, hey, there are larger things at play. And I don't love the Prime Directive. Like, I really actually think that it's useless in a lot of the ways that they use it in TNG and other places. But I think that in this case, here's these two worlds that have been at war, and who knows how many people have died. I wish they'd kind of made more of that in the episode, but if two people groups are at war, it's catastrophic for lots of people. And this one person can supposedly solve all that. What do you do?
That's not even where we end up, right? Because, I mean, well, one thing I'm deeply allergic to this idea that, we've been at war for thousands of years. Yeah, it's a very convoluted setup. And it's like, oh, and this one particular kind of virgin birth that comes every 52,000 generations just popped along. And boy, is she hot. And you think, come on, dudes, what's going on here? And then it just keeps on getting more and more convoluted. And I kind of feel that, I think a lot of the ideas, right, if the question is what does one person sacrifice or what does a society sacrifice in order to get peace, like, that's a great question to ask in a particular setting. But I felt that they started with, wouldn't it be great if you had, you know, had an extremely hot woman on board that could, you know, really get any man that she wanted and everyone was falling at her feet? And how do we work that into a Star Trek-y kind of story?
Oh, so I know.
Felt that they came backwards.
And how about the Ferengi? Why don't we bring the Ferengi in this too?
I don't know the answer to this question, but was this a TOS episode recheck or something? There's so much that I got from this that felt TOS like.
The Metamorph?
Even down to the fact it's like, two warring planets that are, that are thousands and, well, hundreds of thousands of miles apart. They can do no damage to each other. You would almost imagine that two planets could just stay out of each other's way. I can understand when you're perhaps sharing a river as a resource, but two warring planets? I mean, how? It just seemed like too much of the old 60s tropes from, or the worst aspects of TOS being thrown into this, including, frankly, the there's a woman that's fallen at her feet.
Well, I thought it ironic.
They chose the right woman if they're going to choose the let's fall at her feet. They chose the exact right woman for that. So, but I don't disagree.
No, I hate it when they run the shower as I'm doing a show because the water going through the pipes. Goodness gracious. Anyway, I found it ironic that these two planets that don't like each other, it all started over a woman, and now it's supposedly it's going to end with a woman. And let's jump ahead. The guy that she's going for is one of the ugliest creatures in the universe, and he wants nothing to do with her. He didn't care about her. So it's a shame, you know. He doesn't just give her back to Picard.
But hang on, Lou, I think you're falling into the trap here that I would argue whether or not the guy the woman's going to is attractive or not is kind of irrelevant to this human sex slave trafficking story.
Yeah.
And also whether or not he wants her is also, again, a bit irrelevant, because I don't want to be put in a position where I'm thinking, oh, well, as long as the bloke's going to appreciate some nice, you know, hot stuff, then it makes it okay.
Yeah.
Which seems like where they end up morally, which is really objectionable.
Yeah.
And if they had put in, because there's a deleted scene on the Blu-ray, if they had put in the deleted scene where Picard professes his love in his mind to her and, like, steals him away from the guy at the end, oh, God, it's just, yeah, no, it's awful. It's atrocious.
Wait a minute. There's a scene that Picard actually tries to convince her not to go with the guy?
Well, it's in his brain, right? So, if you go on the Blu-rays and you look at the deleted scenes, it starts off the way that it starts off in this one, where he walks her out to the guy in the holosuite and hands her off. Oh, yeah. And then in his brain, the color changes, right? So that's how you can tell that it's all happening in his mind, and not in the real world. So the color changes, and then he says, "Wait, she's not going with you. She's staying here with me." And he does the whole thing and explains it all. And he's like, "And we will fix your countries via this." And the guy's like, "Oh, okay." And then flashback to the real world and they kiss. And that's the end of the episode. If that one, like, 45-second clip had been put back in, you think this episode is the worst episode now. It would have been even more the worst episode then. Yeah.
So I don't know. I might give it an extra point if we could see Picard come to the rescue.
No.
So up to one, then.
Yeah, we're up to one. Yeah.
I found this episode really quite odd. I've got a couple of kind of small bits and pieces to begin with, by the way. One of them is Riker. I think there have been jokes before about Riker being slightly intolerant of other races, but here he specifically comes across as the racist of the bridge crew. With, oh yeah, bring the Ferengi on board. Don't put them anywhere near me.
Yeah,
it's. But then, if you think about it, within, you know, he's obviously concerned of the Ferengi being there, but then no one supervises them as well. And again, like, lap security just makes this episode just feels stupid.
Hey, why don't we meet? Why don't you and I meet down in the cargo bay? Nobody's watching that.
And this is after the old, you know, 200-year-old man. he ended up, he ended up telling them, oh, you know, don't let anyone in because it's got some special stuff in there. Like, almost setting it up as something's going to go wrong. Of course.
Oh yeah, of course.
So I have to just point out, by the way, I think I watched this when I was around 12, 13 or so. At the time, you know, when they end this episode and they say that, you know, the ambassador's like 200 years old. And at this point, I don't know how old Patrick Stewart or Picard's supposed to be, but I remember specifically in my mind going, well, you know, I was a 200-year-old and you're only a 178-year-old. I kind of felt, you know, from my perspective as a teenager, both Picard and the old good dude look old. They don't look like they should be hanging out with Famke Janssen. So, what's going on there?
Yeah. But the guy at the end says that's why they sent him. That's specifically why they sent him.
Yeah.
So who can say why Picard was her choice if they had... I guess he's just such a good guy.
Well, they do have the conversation, you know, I know why they sent me here, but how did you resist her? Meanwhile, Picard, on the other hand, says, I couldn't. Just barely. I wanted the skin on my teeth. Because you know Picard wanted her. Riker wanted her.
Hell, Riker's such a sleazeball. Oh. This episode does no favors for Riker.
No.
Holy cow. That line that he has when he walks out of her room is so bad. So bad.
I'll be in holodeck 4. What do you think he's doing in the holodeck?
So disgusting. And I love Riker. I love Riker. He's one of my favorite characters, but man, that was gross.
We know what he's doing in the holodeck. Yes. Yes. Yeah. But, get housekeeping on standby. Have them outside the holodeck. They'll be needed tonight.
This is actually pretty much horrendous, right? Because first of all, I always like to make the comparison that the Enterprise is basically a job. So he's on duty. He's doing his job. He goes with his boss to meet this woman in the cargo bay. He then has to take her back. For all he knows, Picard's back on the bridge. And he's basically calling in to work going, hey, boss, I'm going to be some time on the holodeck if you don't mind. I think you will know why. So see ya.
I need to take a cold shower.
Essentially, he's saying, yeah, I'm going to going to hit up the old internet prawn. Yeah. And
I mean, he could have finished by saying, don't worry, I won't be long.
I won't be long. No, he's not going to need long at all. So anyway, while they're en route to the conference, the Ferengi, you know, those funny jokesters, they're just begging for help because apparently two engineering scholars that were on that ship have having engine problems and need to be rescued. Okay, I say for the sake of this review, the Ferengi were on board, and that's all you need to know.
No, you need to know more than that, though. And what I mean is that...
Those jokesters.
Okay, when did we last see the Ferengi? Was it, like, Captain's Holiday, or when? Because I think this is really the first time we get, you know, real, way over-the-top, ridiculous, caricatured Ferengi.
I mean, I know... Were they in the one... Did you guys already do the one where they do the thing for the planet?
Do the
wormhole? The wormhole?
Yeah, that's the price.
The price.
But even I think in the price I think I mentioned at the time that they get moved towards this comedic push, but in the price they are better than they are here, and I think that this is almost like the gravity singularity of real bad Ferengi. I found them to be... I think that there's been a little bit of writing that's kept them away from this bad, and I think on this episode they hit the really bad Ferengi writing.
Well, yeah, yeah. I don't think the Ferengi are really even real till Deep Space Nine. They're just, like, jokesters, like I said.
But this is how they are in Deep Space Nine.
No, I think they're better.
I think you only say that because Quark is so good at acting. But they're no better. You'll see that. When we get to Lower Pylon 3, you'll see.
Lower Pylon 2. Lower Pylon 3. Okay. Let me go back to the notes. Okay, so... Oh, man. We've been so far all over. I don't even know where I'm at. So, the woman, Kamala, is an empathic metamorph. Metamorph. Doesn't that mean that she can change shapes? I always thought metamorphosis. What does that mean?
Well, metamorphosis is certainly the act of changing from one form to the other. But one question that I have here, is this in any way relevant to the story? Does it really add anything to have her as a metamorph?
I don't see any metamorph things. I didn't. The empathic part comes up quite a bit. She's a Trill, essentially, without the host. But...
I mean, she could just be a... Like, I mean, well, what they really want, they just want a special woman, right? Especially a very attractive, very special woman.
So they gave her all the special names.
Yeah. I mean, ironically, you know, you show this woman who is able to use her empathic abilities to imprint herself upon whatever man she's going to end up with in order to give him the best sex possible, I suppose. But what you lose in this episode, you have no Troy. Troy gets completely written out of this.
Yeah, where is she?
And you think, well, this woman's just Troy by any other name. And I almost felt that they wrote Troy out of it on purpose, because it makes no sense for this character to be here pretty so close to Troy. And frankly, I've mentioned in the past how much I think that Troy really should be involved in more diplomatic missions and the like. Troy would naturally fit into this mission, and she's omitted. And she's omitted because I think you can't have a metamorph and a special empath if you've got a special empath that's bog standard that you don't do anything with, 26 episodes a season.
But you bring in a special empath for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, I feel like there's so much that this episode could be. And like I say, it's been on my brain, and I can't get it off, and I've watched it multiple times. I can't say it's a terrible episode. I hate all the morality of it. I hate a lot of the lines and the way that they're delivered. I hate so much about it, but I can't get out of my head that whole concept of this war between what should be and what is. And it's a very adult kind of thing to have everybody chasing after this woman. Like, she's throwing off these pheromones and they can barely control themselves. And that whole bar scene is so weird. I think we should talk about that. Like, the bar scene, when they walk in and they give Data as her person, her helper, her bodyguard of sorts. You know what? Lou might be right. Lou, are you still here?
Yeah. I had to go run and do something.
That feels like a real pimp scene right there. Like, here's your bodyguard. He's going to take you to the corner. Make sure, only the highest paid guys take her home.
The chaperone, more like
the chaperone. Yeah,
he was the chaperone who almost fell for the joke. Oh, I think they need help, Commander. Yeah, okay, I'll be right back. Wait a second.
I think I'll stay right here.
Yeah, no, I think I'll stay here.
Oh man, how awful! How atrocious!
Okay.
So, but before Data turning up, right, there is the tea with Picard and Beverly, which I think is nice questions at least get posed so they can be rapidly dismissed. And then Picard ends up meeting with the woman, and I find it kind of objectionable that no man on the crew can kind of keep himself to himself for what is going to be like 24 hours, 48 hours, something like that. It just seems very unlikely.
It's all those pheromones that she's got pumping out. I mean, she walks into a room and they all go nuts about her.
I don't think that's how pheromones work.
That's what they make it sound like.
Yeah, but okay, but let's just, for the sake of argument, assume that they do, right? Let's assume that, all of the men are reduced to this, pheromone chasing kind of like horny beavers.
Yeah.
Then maybe Crusher has something to inoculate. On the ground, you can get inoculated against radiation poisoning. Maybe you can get some type of anti-pheromone juice rubbed in your face or something.
I suppose. Actually, one thing we did overlook or not talk about is when she comes out of the egg and she walked right over to Picard, and you could see the look on Riker's face like, eh? Riker's supposed to be the handsome stud in the room, yet she walks over to Picard. I am for you. Eh?
Okay, so I actually have a... I'm going to get into my problem of... Why is it necessary for her to be handed over as a partner? So why have they chosen to do this? Because I don't, I think the word I always come back to is convoluted, right? So you've got this convoluted war between two convoluted people that are separated a long way away, and the Federation needs to be involved in order to have the thing equidistant. And there's convoluted reasons why it has to be done now, at the end of the episode when, you know, Picard has to end up taking over. And there's a convoluted reason why the person needs to be shipped in this testicle thing that accidentally, for a convoluted reason, we end up breaking open. And I don't understand. They seem to think that this is a requirement as part of the peace process to send a woman across.
Just a woman.
Okay, but not a woman, but you know, the woman across. Now the other people don't seem to have any real desire to receive her. I mean, it's worthwhile maybe for the dude that he ends up with his wife, but it doesn't sound like it's necessary. So you end up with this situation where, really, what's the point? What's the point of this? Why is it so critical that this woman goes across? Now, when Beverly brings up the issue of, this person's basically been sold into slavery, Picard mentions a few things about, we've had arranged marriages and lots of political things have been worked out like that. And, I mean, within the human race, and although that's true, It's very often due to the fact that you would have two opposing houses, you know, whether the kingdoms in Europe or whatever, and you would effectively interbreed them at the highest level because that's where the decision making would be. So you send a princess over, you get a prince back, and you know that these two kingdoms are going to be, you know, more collaborative and or at least not go to war with each other. However, for that to work, you kind of need the power to be a hereditary title passed down the bloodline. It doesn't work when you're like a democracy, right? We're not sending over people to the US to be bred into the Trump family, and you guys aren't sending people over to breed into our political leaders. So I just didn't get...
That's what you think.
That's what you think,
I just didn't get this idea as to why in a modern society, you would almost have this kind of very much archaic way of ensuring loyalty and the coming together of countries. So
we don't know how modern this group of people is. I don't know. And you use the word convoluted a ton there. But we're on a spaceship in the stars. Like, this whole thing is a convoluted mess to begin with. Like, we're going to have to give something to it as viewers to even take it seriously at all. Like, you can't bend space to go through space really fast. Like, nobody can.
No, sure. And I understand it's like, here, that's Mr. Data. He's an android. Convenient. So
it's just a giant convenience. Everything is convenient.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick apart everything, but it almost seems that they do like a bait and switch lock in this episode. So they set something up, and then they say, we're now going to do something in order to basically negate the problems that have been introduced by our setup. And I in particular think that when as you get towards the end of the episode and you're thinking, there's a story, it's run out of steam, and conveniently the ambassador gets attacked by the Ferengi and ends up almost dead. And then what happens, I found funny, I was eye-rolling, was, the Ferengi have already been taken into custody and now they're no longer on the ship. You think, okay, fine. It's like you've served your purpose, vanish into thin air now. And it becomes convoluted that now it's Picard that has to do this with the Empath because we're on a ticking time clock now that you can't wait for an extra week or there wasn't a sub-ambassador that was sent on this mission.
They did set up those convolutions, though, at the very beginning. It's not like something that just magically happens at the end. Like, they established all this stuff early on. So, I mean, I don't know that we can ask for a whole lot more from a 45-minute episode, except that we could ask them to maybe make an episode that's not so morally gray and make an episode that doesn't end up making us ask a bunch of questions. I like your point there where you said, you know, they should have chosen something to follow through on and not keep just trying to upend expectation.
Sure. No, I agree. And was anyone else like almost, well, don't want to be too graphic here, but, you know, I find the concept that you've got these two warring factions have been at war for thousands of generations or however long it is. And all of a sudden it's now Picard can act in the interests of peace and the other planet's got no problem with whatever Picard's going to sign away in the treaty. I mean, come on.
I love the concept of it, and if you had a flagship, this is what the flagship would do. They would go on these big, very important, you know, peace missions. And I think that's what somebody was saying earlier about this feeling like a TOS toss-out script. Like, everything they did was like, this nation is about to, you know, destroy other nations, and we have to, like, solve the galaxy's problems, and we're the police keepers of the galaxy. So part of me really likes that idea. But it is a trope. So, I mean, I absolutely, at this point, they could do something better and different, and they chose not to. And how many times have we had two warring parties on board the Enterprise D at this point in the series? We're 5 years in, and I feel like they've done it at least once per season.
Picard's a peacekeeper. But is it possible, is it possible the story was more to do with Picard and his relationship with Kamala, or the relationship he didn't have or couldn't have, but sure wishes he could have? To me, I thought this episode was more about him than the war, the Ferengi, all of it. None of it was...
it's about him and her, I think. And,
yeah. The relationship they could have had if the circumstances would have been right, but they weren't. And then he can't have her.
No, Lou, you're thinking about the lesson. You're thinking about the episode Lessons next season when they do that storyline, right?
The scene that kind of plays all this out, that kind of lays out what you're saying, Lou, because I think you're not wrong, is that scene with Beverly, that final scene with Beverly. Which I think is the best scene in the episode. And I really love that particular scene. I think that if there's a scene that is well written in this entire episode, it is that scene. It starts with Penny, and they go back and forth a little bit and banter. And then he tells her that she basically caused all this by telling him, look more into this. The camaraderie that they show in that scene and the love that they show in that scene, there are so many things that make me think about how we deal with issues today online, specifically on social media, you know, where we throw some idea out there that somebody disagrees with, and then suddenly, like, everybody in the world hates them, right? Beverly obviously has a huge issue with what Picard's doing and what he's allowing to be done on the ship, but she doesn't cut him off. She never cuts him off. And I think that if I'm going to take anything away from this episode, it's that idea. Because every other idea in this episode is atrocious and awful. And everybody should have listened to Beverly from the beginning, but they didn't. And people aren't always going to listen to you. And so I love that idea that comes out in that one scene towards the end. And I probably watched that scene 15 times, mostly because my kids kept screaming over the couple of lines that I really wanted to hear. But that's a scene that's going to keep me coming back to this episode, even though it's probably one of the worst episodes of TNG and probably all of Star Trek ever to be committed to film. Because I love the ideas that it presents. I love the back and forth that they have, that Picard is struggling with this relationship, that he knows that this woman is not fated for him, and he doesn't even believe in fate, right? Like, he believes that you make your own destiny. Here he is among the stars, but here's this woman who's not, you know, and what do you do? And Beverly says, I don't know. And at the end of it, they both say, you know, I love the line at the end where he's like, you know, I'm glad you're not at me right now. Like, I just needed a shoulder. And she's like, I'll always be your shoulder. Like, I'm here for you. That to me is huge. And it's a lesson we all need to take to heart. Just because someone says something that you don't agree with, or even to some extent does something that you don't fully agree with, if you love them and you know them, you can't just toss them out, write them off. You need to take time to be a shoulder for them, be there for them, and recognize that they're human and that they're going to make mistakes. And I think Picard made a huge mistake here, and I don't know that he ever realizes it. I wish they had that scene in the episode, but... that's probably my biggest takeaway and the thing that I love the most about this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty nice. It is pretty nice.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so let's see. Where do we go from there?
Final thoughts and ratings. 0 stars.
You pretty much got it. The guy shows up. He's... I love that part where it says, you know, between me and you, I could give a crap less about the girl. I just want this something else. And, you know, Picard, it just looks to me like Picard saying, you bastard. I could take her off your hands, but I can't because she's for you. And you bastard.
That reminds me of the line that I hate the most from Riker. When Riker said, I'm not one to unwrap another man's gift. You're a piece of garbage, Riker, at that point in time. Like, because in that moment, like, he's basically saying, yeah, you can own women. And not only can you own women, but if some other man owns a woman, I'm not going to mess with somebody else's property. You're a disgusting, foul human being. And whoever wrote that line, you're a disgusting, foul human being.
No kidding. Riker not only would have opened another man's gift, he would have used the same wrapping paper to wrap her back up and tape her just like she was. You know.
I don't agree with any of that.
No. Riker would have definitely got the toy out and played with it for a while. And then put it back in the box broken for the next man. Yeah, right. So, Chris, I'm curious, what are you making?
What do you mean?
What are you making there with string and the knife? And kind of looks like you're blowing out candles. And...
Yeah, I have this candle going over here. It's like this big mass of a candle.
That is funny. I'm just watching you, wondering if you're trying to put a fire out.
No, I'm kind of toying with it to keep it alive and... My kids, it's just a thing that I've created on my desk. This massive candle.
That's funny. Okay, I'm sure I've forgotten a lot. I don't know where I'm at, so did we cover this enough?
I mean, we've spent 40 minutes on it, 50 minutes on it. I think we've nailed it down pretty
there's
hard.
There's really not
Doc,
much
you got
going
anything else
on.
To say?
Her wedding dress is cute.
Oh, the aesthetics of this episode are magnificent.
Yeah, she was beautiful.
Well, not just her. I love TNG. I've been in Deep Space Nine for so long, and that was kind of my first thought that I thought I was gonna lead with on this episode, but I guess I'll close with it. The TNG aesthetic is just so beautiful. I love it all so much. It feels like home. It is where I started my Star Trek fandom. Well, sort of. And it's where I'll probably end it. The last Star Trek I'll watch before I die will be TNG because it's, I don't know, man. It just feels comfortable to me. Feels homely. Homey. Not homely, homey. I love it. I think that the way that they set up everything from the holodeck, whatever that is, the place where the war started and the place where the war will end, all of it is really beautiful. And yeah, I love the aesthetics of it.
And she sure looks Trillish.
It's definitely... I think the original reason why you put me on the schedule for this is because we did the episode with the Trill together, and you were like, oh, and so maybe you should come on for the other Trill episode when these people who are like the Trill are on. They're definitely Trill.
You mean you didn't ask for this? I put you on it?
I did not ask for this one, no. I asked for the next one I'll be on. Or, well, I asked for the few next ones I'll be on. Who knows when I'll be on. We're doing these all out of order at this point, right, Lou?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. Yeah. Plus, we lost one. One got disintegrated. Okay. Oh, say, hey, Doc, were you recording this at all?
I'm not prepared to answer that question.
Oh, Chris, did TeamSpeak get installed good?
It has not installed yet, but it is finally downloaded.
Oh my goodness, you must have like super, super snellish slow speed.
No, it downloaded minutes after I mentioned that it was downloading earlier. I just never clicked the install thing.
All right, well, I'd be curious to see how it works for you. Okay, I don't know. Picard walks her down the aisle. And then watches her get married, or watches her go to this guy that, he's ugly. Ugly, ugly.
Okay, so let me ask a question, though, is that she doesn't, you know, this particular woman was, the whole special point of her was that she kind of becomes the perfect mate for whichever man she happens to, you know, to fall in love with or imprint upon, which is a very weird way, right? It's not exactly clear as to whether or not it doesn't seem like there's a huge amount of personal freedom on her side, but she ends up imprinting, quote unquote, on Picard,
yeah,
and
I think
not
she
on
did.
Not on the dude,
mm-mm.
And I don't know, I feel that that's a bit. They kind of mention as a bit of a throwaway, don't they? So they, I almost read this, by the way, as a slight, you know, comparison with, you know, pregnancy. It's like a, hey, you know, I'll find my husband, and you know, I'll then get pregnant, and then it's like, oh, sorry, Picard, you know, the kid's yours. What do we do now? And he's like, oh, well, get married quick to that guy, quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if it's not. You know, this is supposed to be kind of a significant thing for her. And in the end, she just disappears. And I don't get the impression that Picard's particularly... she stays in Picard's thoughts that long, not until next week.
Well, of course not. Next week, something else comes up. But it seems to me, metaphorically speaking, she got pregnant by Picard, and now this other guy is raising the baby.
Sure.
Because now, you know, she is imprinted on Picard, and she's got to live with this guy who is not Picard, probably is nowhere near Picard. So I think, in a sense, she's got a bad life coming up. Because she's not who she wants to be with.
And even if she was, he's not with anyone he cares about, so there's that.
Okay. Well, then, I guess that's... It's time to go, guys.
But wait, where on earth does this come from, right? We've been having great episodes, you know. I mean, and even if we've been having, like, bad-ish episodes every now and again, this is such a turn, you know, it's out of left field, and it's like, hey, let's just put together something that would have looked out of place and sexist in the original series, and then they do this, and then they move on. Just quite astonishing,
dude. They don't move on. What do you think they do next episode?
Next episode's cost of living, right?
Nope.
Is it not? I thought it was.
No.
What's the next episode?
Imaginary friend.
Yeah, but the thing is that I can see how Imaginary Friend started as an idea that turned into a car crash, whereas here, it's almost as if they started with, hey, let's have a car crash, and let's see how well we can, you know, how fast we can hit it.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So there was a previous crash, we just decided to crash into it.
Oh dear, Lou, you caught me. You set me up there. Of course.
Oh, by the way.
Of course, Cost of Lisbon was last week.
Last week,
I remember
yeah!
that well, and we had a great discussion.
Oh, yes. Goodness, I don't even know who it was with.
You mean memorable guest?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think who was on with Cost of Living. I know it was supposed to be Brian. I just don't remember if it was Brian or not. Well, anyway, maybe someday we'll remember in our old age.
Well, it then turned into iBorg, next phase, Inner Light, Time's Arrow. And now you can't tell me that they've completely lost all of their senses and have forgotten how to write Star Trek.
Right, exactly.
And I would argue that they hadn't completely lost their senses on this one. Like, they had some really interesting ideas. They just never... They didn't do anything with any of them. You know, like, they came in with the concept on slavery, on sex slavery, and they should have followed that through to its logical end, which is Picard saying this far and no further. They had two or three other interesting ideas, but they went with Ferengi, and yeah.
And
so actually, I feel like something is there. It's just
no. I agree, Chris. One thing I got frustrated about is they bring up the Prime Directive, and they bring it up in a weird way. They basically, I think there's a bit of a chat, and they don't quite like what's going on. And then he said, "Oh, the Prime Directive forbids us from getting involved." But you think, yeah, but the Prime Directive doesn't say that you have to be a taxi service for these guys. Mm-hmm. They by all means walk away, but there's a difference between not being walking away and then actively undermining their society. Now, at which point you get an interesting question, which is raised, which is that should you do something that might be wrong in order to for the greater good? So do you want to sell this person into slavery for the purpose of preventing a war? And, people are going to start quoting the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Fine. But you don't even go there. That's not even touched. It's like, she seems to be happy enough in whatever doctrine she's been brought up in.
Yeah, that is definitely a question that I asked on my second viewing. It didn't occur to me the first time, but the second time I was like, how did they even get in this place? Like, how do you're sold a bill of goods, but they're setting up this holodeck, right? Like, there's huge gaping holes in the plot that, you know, on a week-to-week show, I guess, could happen. But I feel like if they took another couple passes, they'd say, you know what, this doesn't really make a lot of sense. And, we're going to bring up the Prime Directive here, but why would they still continue down this path? Why not say, hey, bro, listen, your dude can meet you on this planet 5 seconds from here because we're not going to be a part of your sex slavery scheme. Bad stuff. Terrible stuff.
Good boy. Okay, I think that's enough. Let's go on. I think it's time to rate this episode on a scale of 1 to 2, with 1 being the worst and 2 being what it better not get, or 5 if you want to go be technical about it, would be in the best. I'm completely down with this episode, and I don't mean down in a good way. This is down. I'm down. I don't think this could get any worse. So this is going to be season 5's second 1.0. Even Violation's got a 1.5, and Newground got a 1. So this will be the second straight up 1 for me for this season. Get the bad out of the way. Doc, what about you? No, Chris, you're the guest. You should have went first. What say you?
So at least go before James.
Yeah. Lou forgot his manners for a second, but no, I found him.
Fine. Not a big deal. I recur so often at this point, you could throw me in whatever. What do you say about this? I am completely, fully still intrigued by this episode. I cannot believe that this got made. That it passed any censors. I know that it came out in the 90s, but dang, bro. Like, there's so many little things, and I can't get this episode off my brain. I'll probably watch it again because it's so intriguing to me that this is even a thing. that could get made. I'm a huge, huge fan of Famke Janssen. I think that she's fantastic as a Bond girl. I think she's fantastic in X-Men. Everything I've ever seen her in, she's been fantastic, and she has not aged a day in 20 years. So lots of praise for that. She's amazing. Mm-hmm. But with all that said, this is an episode that never fully commits to any idea. And Doc laid it out pretty clear. It plays fast and loose with a couple of cool ideas. It'll get you thinking about some things, but it's definitely not where you want to end up. I think that there should have been a whole lot more Beverly Crusher doing what Beverly Crusher did in the first scene and raising more and more of a stink as the episode goes on. And I'm fine if she raises more and more of a stink and she ends up where she ended up. I'm fine if she ends up where she ended up. But there should have been more of that and less of the Ferengi nefarious whatever. You didn't have to have the Ferengi in this episode at all. While I love the Ferengi, I'm a huge lover of the Ferengi, as you well know, and the fact that Rom is in this episode makes me very happy. I did not need them. What I needed was them to make a decision about what this is, and they never did. In fact, if you were to try to say that they made a decision, then they made the absolute most wrong decision you could make. This falls into the category of what Matt Smonsky, my buddy on Upper Pylon 2, calls icky. This is pretty icky where it ends up. The fact that Picard wants to fall in love with this woman but can't, but still follows through on allowing her to go and be forcibly put into a situation that she admits to him multiple times in the episode that she does not want to be in is gross and disgusting. She also says that she wants to be in it, but like, this is a thing that our people should not be involved with in the Federation. So this is gross. It's icky. Sex slavery and sex trafficking are never okay, no matter if they have brainwashed the trafficked to the nth degree. It is not okay, even to end a war. So that's where I stand on it.
You still think my prostitution analogy is wrong?
I think that Picard is not the pimp.
I see. You're right there. You're right.
The ambassador is the pimp. Picard is a guy who got stuck in the middle of this unwittingly. The unwitting part is definitely true.
He was the Uber driver. He's just the Uber driver. He had no idea. He didn't know what was going on in the backseat.
Any good Uber driver is going to kick those people out of their car. Anyway, yeah. Let's keep going. This is a one-star episode, and I don't give those lightly. In fact, I've rarely ever give one-star episodes, but this one feels gross. Code of Honor is the only other thing I think in that camp, maybe Melora.
Melora.
One star for me, okay. And it's unfortunate because it does have some good things in there that could have been great if only they had made better decisions.
So Melora, because of the medical ethics
The medical ethics with that.
Doesn't he do that twice?
But the second time is not as egregious. Anyway, we won't go into all that.
Why is that? Because the second time, like, she's underage, isn't she?
I don't know. I don't remember the second one.
No, the second one was the three psychiatric patients that one of them doesn't speak, and finally she speaks.
Yeah, she's not underage.
I mean, no, she's not. She looks
like
it.
Day over 12. I would be surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she certainly looks... not. She's younger than Melora.
Definitely.
Question.
Definitely. Okay, so Chris, you said one. I've got you down for one. James.
Okay. I was like watching this today. And I thought that I was going to be like the outlier, miserable person on the episode, because I'm coming in at a one. I thought it was a one out of, you know, one out of five. My ones are basically episodes that are just bad. I don't like them. Thumbs down kind of episodes. I don't know what people take away or what you're expected to take away from this episode, to be honest. I don't really know what the lessons this week are. I don't know what we're expected to think. I don't think there's no great action. There's no great story. It's a convoluted set of circumstances that have really been. It's a nicely produced TOS episode done 30 years later. I found it very very strange, very jarring that we see like all of our characters behave like this. You barely see, well, obviously we see no Troy, we barely see LaForge, we barely see Worf. There are key components of those people's jobs that are just go AWOL. In particular, you know, Worf does zero in terms of security in this episode. Data seemed like a relatively clever idea to keep the woman engaged while still being able to have a bit of freedom around the ship, but they play that for like about 90 seconds before they jettison it for some reason, which I'm not entirely sure why they even jettison it. Data seemed to keep her out of trouble. I don't know. I feel that I feel they started from the point that wouldn't it be great if Picard had a love interest, and for some reason, because he's the greatest lover in the world, she ends up having to leave him to settle for a not so great a lover, and then they kind of built the story around that. I'm not particularly impressed. So, you know, it's not painful, but it's up there. I was actually beginning to think whether this was the. I mean, as an aside, by the way, I ended up within the last like 6 weeks. I watched the quote worst episode of Star Trek that I've seen, certainly since the. I'll probably say ever, but it's certainly within within TNG forward, and it kind of caused me actual pain. And when I was watching this, I was thinking, maybe I was a bit too harsh on that episode. Maybe this one is. I think it's slightly less painful than the aforementioned episode that I'm not going to discuss. But it's certainly no good.
Okay,
that's all I've got.
Okay, well, this is the second time in our history so far that we've had one straight across. The last one was The Outrageous Akona, but actually I gave that a 1.5, but still, it's probably still considered a 1. So it's interesting.
Honestly, I'd watch Outrageous Akona like back-to-back 3 times before having to watch this one.
I love The Outrageous Akona. I think you had the wrong person on that episode as a guest, because I would have given that one a 5.
Really?
We had Paul
Finch on, and we all gave it a 1. Well, I gave it a 1.5.
Han Solo coming to Star Trek is the greatest thing.
Is that what that was? Yeah. Okay. Well, then, Chris, I guess that's it for us. The next thing I have you on for, as we mentioned before, you little rascal, you, is Rascals. That's in season 6. How'd you get on season 6? We didn't even open it yet.
You could cut that out, Lou. You actually gave me 2 episodes in season 6 that you haven't.
Do you know the likelihood of me cutting this out? Me remembering to cut this out is pretty slim. That's right, a fistful of datas.
Because I'm also on Fistful, yeah. Because you, actually, that one was a huge gift to me that you gave. Because I mentioned on Upper Pylon 2 early on that one of my favorite episodes, and it still is mm-hmm. Fistful of Datas. It's the episode I go back to anytime I'm sick and like just want to watch Star Trek or anytime.
Right. Did I even tell you I put you on that? Or did I just put
you
that
did. Down? No, you mentioned it to me. You mentioned it, and you said, hey, I got you on Fistful of Datas. I heard you really love it. And, yeah. And I was like, man, that's so sweet of you and, like, thoughtful. So I was really appreciative. And I'm excited to be on Fistful of Datas. It's one of my absolute favorite episodes of TNG of all time. My son actually watched it for the first time. He's 2. Watched it for the first time with me weeks ago over Thanksgiving break, I think. So,
that's cool. That is cool.
Okay, we have the action figures up here. I have Worf and Troy and... little baby Worf. What's his name? Anthony? Antonio?
Alexander.
Alexander.
Arbitrary nameage.
An innocent girl creates the ultimate fantasy.
How come I can see you?
A real live imaginary friend.
No one will know. It'll be our secret.
But has she unleashed a demon in disguise?
That thing's feeding off our shields.
And can anything stop its reign of terror?
You can die along with everyone else.
Find out on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay. Well then, okay guys, everyone join us next week as we review episode number 22. That's Imaginary Friend. And not sure who we're going to have on for that one as well.
So if you want to come on to any episode, please let us know.
Yeah, if you happen to want to come on to the Battle Bridge, I think there could be I don't know. Obviously, by the time you're seeing that, or by the time you're hearing this, it will have been recorded. But we don't know yet. So, you'll be surprised with us. Alright. Alright, guys. So, let's see here. Take care, everyone. And good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.